Welcome to Wrestling with Theology. My name is Doug Minton. I am your host. I am the pastor at Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, as well as a lifelong wrestling fan. Wrestling with Theology wrestles with the history of pro wrestling as well as the theology of the Lutheran Church. Today's wrestling profile is Ray Traylor. Ray Traylor was one of those wrestlers who found his niche and went full force with it. He was also one of the few wrestlers to have the same billing hometown regardless of his gimmick. He was proudly from Cobb County, Georgia, especially Marietta. Ray was a corrections officer before he joined Jim Crockett Promotions in 85. He quickly went from enhancement talent to what became his greatest gimmick, Big Bubba Rogers. Dusty Rhodes took the diamond in the rough and knocked off a few edges and created the Big Bubba Rogers gimmick as a bodyguard for Jim Cornette in his feud with the James Boys, who were Dusty Rhodes and Magnum TA under masks. He got a solid push in Jim Crockett Promotions as an unstoppable heel, including a decent feud with Dusty. He went from Crockett Promotions to Bill Watts' UWF and quickly began a feud with One Man Gang. The feud culminated in Rogers winning the Universal Heavyweight title from Gang. He would go on to lose the title to Dr. Death Steve Williams in probably one of the first matches I ever saw from UWF. Shortly thereafter, Traylor made the jump to the WWF. He was renamed Big Boss Man and took on the gimmick of a correctional officer. His first big feud was with Hulk Hogan, beginning with an attack on Hogan during the Brother Love show shortly after the first SummerSlam. To heat that feud, he formed a tag team with his former rival One Man Gang as the Twin Towers. They feuded with Hogan and Randy Savage until shortly before WrestleMania 5. Savage turned on Hogan, setting up WrestleMania's main event during a tag team match with the Twin Towers. They would later go on to feud with the Rockers and then Demolition. Traylor still feuded with Hogan on and off, including a series of cage matches ending with one on Saturday night's main event on May 27th, 1989, where Hogan superplexed Boss Man off the top of the cage. Shortly thereafter, Traylor turned face and even appeared in Hogan's corner during his match against Earthquake at SummerSlam 90. After SummerSlam, Boss Man focused on singles competition, feuding with the Heenan family. In 92, Boss Man had a brief feud with Nails, an ex-convict who had supposedly been abused by Boss Man while imprisoned in Cobb County. He went back to the Big Bubba gimmick while on a tour of Japan in 93, before appearing in WCW as The Boss on December 18, 93. He feuded with Vader for most of 94 after being renamed the Guardian Angel, thanks to a lawsuit from the WWF. He turned heel again in early 95 and began going by Big Bubba Rogers again. In 96, he joined the Dungeon of Doom, but he would later turn on them to join the NWO by the end of the year. That stay was brief, as Traylor was knocked out by an unknown assailant and subsequently fired from the NWO by Bischoff. His last match in WCW was against Goldberg on March 30th, 98. He went back to the WWF as the Big Boss Man. This time he came to the ring in SWAT gear instead of the traditional police uniform. He served as Vince's bodyguard for a while during his feuds with Stone Cold and DX. He was one of the first to join the corporation, where he got most of his titles. During his time in the corporation, Boss Man had the absolute worst storyline in wrestling history. I honestly don't think there has been or ever will be a storyline as horrible as kidnapping someone's dog and then feeding it to them. That one storyline basically made me switch back to WCW instead of WWF at the time. His subsequent feud with the Big Show wasn't all that great either. After leaving the corporation, Boss Man had a few minor storylines before finally being dropped to training talent in Ohio Valley Wrestling in late 02. His last match was during the tournament final to crown a new IWA World Heavyweight Champion, where he lost to Jim Duggan. Traylor died of a heart attack on September 22nd, 04 at home. He was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 16. While Traylor was a great wrestler to watch with his great gimmicks, except the Guardian Angel, his title collection shows some lack of respect by promoters. Three titles: the UWF Heavyweight title, the WWF Hardcore title four times, and then he was WWF Tag Team Champions with Ken Shamrock once. Overall, PWI ranks him as number 138 of all time, which I think is a little low, but the 137 above him are some seriously top-notch wrestlers in their own right. So, if that's where they placed him, that's where they placed him. I'll be back in a moment as we start looking at the plagues in Exodus chapter 7. As we look at our digging deeper into Exodus, we find ourselves in chapter 7, where we have the beginning of the plagues. And the Lord said to Moses, "See, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of his land. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, Pharaoh will not listen to you." People get all hung up on the fact that God says, "I will harden Pharaoh's heart." Why does he do it? "So I may multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt." Throughout the plagues, we will see that God is going against every one of Pharaoh's gods. Every god in the land of Egypt is targeted by the plagues. But even then, Pharaoh will not listen. He will not let the people of Israel go. Not until it is too late. So when will that be? "Then I will lay my hand on Egypt," he says, continuing in verse 4, "and bring my host, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. The Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring out the people of Israel from among them." Moses and Aaron did so. They did just as the Lord commanded them. Now Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. We have the time in many congregations where people say, "I'm too old for this. I have done my time. I'm retired now." Moses was 80 when he started this whole process of being called in the burning bush to bring the children of Israel out. I'm sure he was thinking, "You know, God, I'd like to be retired because I'm 80. Aaron probably thought, "I'm 83. Why would I want to embark on this?" Knowing that who knows how long this is going to take. But God calls people, even in their late years, to do great things. Abraham was 75 when he came out of Ur of the Chaldees. Moses is 80 at the burning bush. God doesn't care about age. God wants his people to do his will. So Moses and Aaron do what God says, and they go and speak to Pharaoh. But God has a few more words for Moses and Aaron first in verses 8 through 12. Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "When Pharaoh says to you, 'Prove yourselves by working a miracle,' then you shall say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent.'" So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants and became a serpent. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Still, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Pharaoh is not going to listen to flashy tricks by something that can easily be done by his own magicians. So, yes, Aaron throws his staff down. It becomes a serpent. The magicians say, "Ha, we can do that too, see?" And then Aaron's serpent swallows up all their serpents, showing that God is more powerful through Moses and Aaron than all the magicians and the gods that they call upon in their secret arts. So now we have Pharaoh's heart hardened because you can't do anything more than what my guys can do anyway. So why should I listen to you? We go into the first plague where God turns the water into blood. Verse 14. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Pharaoh's heart is hardened. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he is going out to the water. Stand on the bank of the Nile to meet him and take in your hand the staff that turned into a serpent. And you shall say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, sent me to you, saying, Let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But so far you have not obeyed.'" So Moses is told to go down to the bank of the Nile and tell Pharaoh what's what. And what is what? "Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, with the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water that is in the Nile, and it shall turn to blood. The fish in the Nile shall die, and the Nile will stink, and the Egyptians will grow weary of drinking water from the Nile." And the Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the waters of Egypt, over the rivers, their canals, and their ponds, and all their pools of water, so that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, even in vessels of wood and in vessels of stone." So every drop of water becomes blood. This is the first plague, because the Nile was the source of life for the Egyptians. This plague was against the Egyptian god Hapi, who was the one who granted the Egyptian oases around the Nile the annual flooding that made the desert land able to bring in crops. So God, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, says, "Ha, I'm better than Hapi. I can take away the source of your life in the water of the Nile. Without that, there is no other water. Drill as they might anywhere else, every drop of water in Egypt was turned to blood at God's command. And there was nothing the Egyptians could do about it." So we continue in verse 20. "Moses and Aaron did as the Lord commanded. In the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, he lifted up the staff and struck the water in the Nile, and all the water in the Nile turned into blood. And the fish in the Nile died, and the Nile stank, so that the Egyptians could not drink water from the Nile. There was blood throughout all the land of Egypt. But the magicians of Egypt did the same by their secret arts. So Pharaoh's heart remained hardened, and he would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. Pharaoh turned and went into his house, and he did not even take this to heart. And all the Egyptians dug along the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink the water of the Nile." 7 full days passed after the Lord struck the Nile. So for an entire week, there was no water, just blood. You could not bathe, you could not drink. It was a nightmare, especially if you consider maybe this was in summer. So summer in Egypt along the equator, probably not a very cool time of the year to have all the water be turned into blood. As we move into chapter 8, a week later, the Lord said to Moses, "Go into Pharaoh and say to him, 'Thus says the Lord, let my people go that they may serve me. But if you refuse to let them go, behold, I will plague all your country with frogs. The Nile shall swarm with frogs that shall come up into your house and into your bedroom and on your bed and into the houses of your servants and your people and into your ovens and your kneading bowls. The frogs shall come upon you and upon your people and on all your servants.'" And the Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your hand with your staff over the rivers, over the canals, and over the pools, and make frogs come up on the land of Egypt." So Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land. But the magicians did the same by their secret arts and made frogs come up on the land of Egypt. Now you would think that the frogs would not necessarily be something major for the Egyptians as a god. But there were actually two gods that were symbolized by having frogs' heads. The male was Kek, who was the deification of the primordial darkness. It was just the darkness of the soul. Female version is Heket, who is like the exact opposite, where she is the goddess of childbirth and fertility. So, here's an interesting thought. Let's have the goddess of fertility be overrun by an overrunning of frogs. And the frogs were everywhere, as I said. You know, in the house, the bedroom, on the bed, in the kneading bowls, in the ovens. You could not go anywhere without stepping on a frog. And I've been places where the rivers have flooded and there have just been frogs everywhere when the water goes down. It is not a pleasant sight. And just to hear the croaking all the time. And then I enjoy the fact that God let the magicians do the same thing by their secret arts. So not only did Aaron bring forth frogs, the magicians brought forth frogs. And I'm sure Pharaoh's like, "Oh, great, guys. Why did you have to duplicate it to make even more frogs?" But Pharaoh hardened his heart because, once again, the magicians could repeat the same trick. So verse 8, Pharaoh called Moses and Aaron and said, "Plead with the Lord to take away the frogs from me and from my people, and I will let the people go to sacrifice to the Lord." Moses said to Pharaoh, "Be pleased to command me when I am..." Moses said to Pharaoh, "Be pleased to command me when I am to plead for you and for your servants and for your people, that the frogs may be cut off from you and your houses and be left only in the Nile." And he said, "Tomorrow." Moses said, "Be it as you say, so that you may know that there is no one like the Lord our God. The frogs shall go away from you and your houses and your servants and your people. They shall be left only in the Nile." So Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried to the Lord about the frogs, and as he had agreed with Pharaoh. And the Lord did according to the word of Moses. The frogs died out in the houses, the courtyards, and the fields. And they gathered them together in heaps, and the land stank. But when Pharaoh saw that there was a respite, he hardened his heart and would not listen to them, as the Lord had said. I'm not sure what was actually worse. The frogs being everywhere while living, or the frogs laying all over the place dead and having to gather them all up. I am not sure how that worked. But then again, they've piled them all into heaps and the land stank. The correlation here going back to the first one. The water became blood and the Nile stank. Now the whole land stinks because of the frogs being dead now. God wiped all the frogs out, but did not take like a wind and just fly them off somewhere. He just struck them all dead so that the Egyptians had to pick them up. And when Pharaoh saw that it was done, and probably because the frog corpses were all laying everywhere, I'm sure that probably helped harden his heart, so that he would not let people go and go back on his word that he had given to Moses. And, well, that's Pharaoh's prerogative. He is allowed to do what he would like with them because, well, they are his slaves. But it gets worse, as we'll see next time as we pick up with the third plague, the plague of gnats.
Thank you for your time and listening to this podcast. If you'd like to hear more, go back to our archives to hear the previous episodes of Wrestling with Theology. Also hear Sunday morning sermons from Redeemer. If you are in the Twin Cities area on Sunday morning, you are welcome to join us at Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church at 4201 Regent Avenue North in Robbinsdale, just off of the corner of 42nd Avenue and Highway 100. Just look for Jesus blessing the travelers along the road. Our services are at 9 a.m. We have Bible study at 10:30 following the service, with coffee hour in between. We encourage you, anytime you are in the area, to join us for worship and to wrestle with theology with us.